across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning and welcome back at 7:06. Nice to have you along. Live from Chippewa Falls on this Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024. Coming up later this hour, Ben Dahlman puts the PAL in principal. You know, P-A-L instead of P-L-E. Anyway, our junior reporter, Emery, recently conducted a probing interview with her elementary school principal. And in this week's homeroom segment, we have our own visit with Ben Dahlman as part of our end of school year appreciation for the men and women who keep our schools running smoothly for the teachers, students, and staff. Also, we'll talk about some shifting of the population numbers and what it means for couple of our civic media communities, Eau Claire and Waukesha. Along the way, if you'd like to join us by phone or by text, 855-75-CIVIC. We got a text question during our climate check report about batteries in electric vehicles. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. First, meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here, and it is almost... It's almost under protest that I'm going to bring up Rob from Tigerton after what he did to me yesterday.
Oh, no. We got to have fun with Pat.
Good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy, light rain, 58 degrees. There were a few trees down south of Tigerton, 1.6 inches of rain. I want to thank the meteorologists and people from Civic Media for their excellent coverage and Brittany for warning us ahead of time. Meteorologists are our heroes in severe weather events.
Aww.
So you get the love, you know, and
yeah,
and I get ancient video brought back. Of,
and while we're at it, I have baby pictures of Pat. All right.
right.
That would have actually been preferable to 18-year-old me, but I digress. Brittany, there obviously were some storm damage reports around the state. At one point, there were nearly 60,000 people without power. I'm looking at the Excel map right now, and apparently it's down to fewer than 10,000. But it was a rough night in many places, as you warned us about 24 hours ago.
No, it sure was. I mean, that came in quick. The clouds got dark. It came in fast. I'm talking
really
winds.
Fast. Yeah.
Yes. I tried to stay out for a little bit of it, but the tornado sirens were blaring here in Wausau. We've had a tornado warning, and actually some people told law enforcement that they saw a tornado on the ground in Unity just west of Wausau. So that was the only actual tornado report from the night. Of course, people are out there looking to see if there's any damage, but damage statewide from trees being uprooted, power poles being knocked down, winds gusted from 70 to 75 miles per hour in Grant, Dane, Wood counties, Waupaca, Marinette as well. And gusts definitely hit 60 miles per hour for a good chunk of the state. So that system is gone and done, but we are dealing with the rising rivers from anywhere from 1 to 3 inches of rain that fell yesterday. We're going to dry out today. Just a few spotty showers are possible into the Northwoods. The rest of the state is going to be dry, mostly sunny by this afternoon, just breezy with a southwest wind at 25 miles per hour. And highs today, we're going to climb into those upper 60s to low 70s. So still a little on the cooler side. We will warm up, though, as soon as tomorrow.
As we look ahead toward a holiday weekend where folks are going to want to be out and about and hopefully not getting a couple of inches of rain dumped on them like last night. It was really intense at times.
Yeah, it came in fast.
Unless you lived in southeastern Wisconsin and we just got wind.
Did you just get the wind part of it?
The graphic that Brittany sent showed like all this stuff happening all over the state, and then just a little slice of southeastern Wisconsin's like, yeah, it's gonna get windy.
Yeah, I saw on the Weather Channel they had reporters on either side of it, and the folks on the other side of it, like 90 degrees and just windy, just that hot wind that's blowing, and you know somebody else is getting hammered with it, and that was definitely Wisconsin's turn and Iowa and other places as well.
Iowa. Ugh.
Apparently I was looking thirsty enough from Rob. Pat, you are a legend in broadcasting.
Woo-hoo!
Rob, I guess the Tigerton reports can stay after a while, after all. So, all right, Brittany, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You bet. On this, what did I say it was? Wednesday?
Wednesday,
May 22nd. And I was going to get to, we didn't get to the National Day calendar in our last segment there. Today is International Day for Biological Diversity. Today is Craft Distillery Day. It's Boss Babe Day, Solitaire Day, Preeclampsia Day for folks who need to take care of their health during pregnancy. It's Vanilla Pudding Day, and it's World Goth Day. I don't know if, Greg, you ever went through a goth phase or any kind of rebellious things like that. But
I mean, I was a metalhead. I'm still a metalhead, but I had really long hair and played guitar. And
I could see that.
Had what my friends called causeless anger.
Causeless anger. Very nice. By the way, whoever developed Boss Babe Day, I mean, I can't, we're not supposed to really say that anymore.
It sounds like a dude.
My boss
made
is
that
a
up.
Babe. Like, yeah. No. I think that's one of those where, you know, like other people get to say that. You don't get to say that. It's in that kind of a lexicon these days. So let's just say, you know who you are. Have a happy day that way. And Craft Distillery, we've got some in this area. I mean, they have just grown by leaps and bounds, you know?
Yes, they have.
And everybody has their favorites, but at least there's opportunity. It's more small business growth in the area, shall we say.
Agreed.
We had a text question during our climate change segment saying, this was from the Waukesha area. A friend of mine was bashing the electric car plans because she said they're just burying the used batteries. I'd like to know what is happening to the used batteries. A show on that would be great and some sources of information. Well, we are here for you. As we looked all around the interwebs, the short answer is this. Electric car batteries are really, really expensive.
Yeah.
They have a lot of, shall we say, precious materials in there, and including materials you don't bury, that no landfill wants. And so the short answer is no, they're not buried. Those things are recycled, like down to the nubbins. Every bit of that, something that expensive with rare material like that, when an electric car battery dies, yes, somebody is eager to get it and break it down and not to dump it. So I'm not sure where your friend got their information, but that is not a thing. Maybe Elon does that with his Teslas. I don't know.
We could just bury the Teslas.
Could we just bury Elon? Oh. I mean,
whoa.
And any of that would work. You know?
It sounds like his or her friend is. It starts those comments off with, well, you know what they do with those batteries, right? And then continue to speak with no authority.
Yes, you know, makes a guess at something. So that friend is always welcome to text us or call us at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC, and we'll tell you more. So Greg's in Waukesha. I'm in Chippewa Falls, right near Eau Claire. And there are new population estimates that have come in for the state, and they are written up by the fellow's name is John Johnson. And he is research fellow? Yes, at the Marquette Law School Lubar Center, where he studies political, demographic, and housing trends in Wisconsin. And this is all can be found in the recombobulation area by our friend and esteemed journalist, award-winning journalist, Dan Schaefer. There we go. See, here's the thing. As they point out, you know, the census is done every 10 years. And so, I mean, it's old news almost as soon as it comes out. It's dated. But the Census Bureau is doing annual population estimates based on, as it says here, carefully collected administrative records, births, deaths, tax returns, etc., to give a look at how the population changes. And the estimates cover a 12-month period, but it goes from July 1st. And so the new data is out for July 1st of 2022 through June 30th of 2023. So we're talking, you know, data that's almost a year old already, but still newer than the 2020 census, which is what we'd be working on. So I would highly recommend going to therecombobulationarea.news. Sign up for Dan's newsletter, and you also get to see articles like these. And I'm not going to break down all of the various moves. There are various reasons why the populations of some Wisconsin counties grew and why some shrank. Sometimes it relates to migration, you know, for jobs and opportunities. Sometimes it relates to births and deaths. And so you compare all those things. But the thing that I thought was interesting from a city population standpoint is that if these estimates, you know, are correct, then Eau Claire has actually leapfrogged over Waukesha to take Waukesha's place as the seventh largest city in Wisconsin. You have Milwaukee first, where the population has been shrinking, but not as much in this period as in the past. So you have a population of 578,000 in the last census. Madison's at 275,000. Green Bay at 107,000. Kenosha, Greg, you're at 99,983. Can you just invite a few friends over and hit 100,000?
Yeah, I mean, last time I looked, it was like 91 back in the when I worked in Racine. Okay. And Racine's population is shrinking, unfortunately.
Yeah, Racine, although Racine is still a fifth on the list at just about 78,000. Sixth would be Appleton at 76,000. And then based on these estimates, it looks like Eau Claire has just nudged over 70,000. And Waukesha is right in that 70,000 range. But if you look at the estimates, Eau Claire would have just eked ahead of Waukesha, followed by Oshkosh and Janesville, rounding out your top 10. And so for, you know, myriad reasons, there's why people go, you know, either from cities into suburban areas. The suburban areas of, you know, the Twin Cities, Milwaukee, Madison are, you know, growing rapidly because of jobs and opportunities. But again, for all the details on that, head over to therecombobulationarea.news and learn more as to why Eau Claire is looking in Greg's direction and going neener, neener.
Yeah, I don't mind. I live in Kenosha. We almost have 100,000 people. I'm good.
You're good. You got, yeah. You got plenty of, you got friends. You got neighbors. We'll unpack more of the news. We'll talk about the Brewers in the second of a three-game series in Miami. And then later, our education segment, our homeroom segment, talks about school principals and the value of them in keeping a school running smoothly. All that plus Todd Alba on the way. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News Radio, part of Courier Newsroom, and distributed by the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Once again, you're hearing Elton John, but the words were written by Bernie Taupin, who has a birthday today, a longtime lyricist during Elton John's real hit-making phase of his early career. Again, you can reach us here at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. Call us or text us to join the program. And I appreciate our texter ringing us back on the text line about electric car batteries and how they're recycled, not buried. And we appreciate that this person thanked us and said that we'll try to convince her that they're being recycled, which is what I thought, but the information she was getting is contrary to the fact. So I hope we get that information so that we can set those folks straight. This would normally be the time where we get into a few more of some of the state-based political stories. And I've got Wisconsin stories to share with you, but it's been a bit of a slow period. How do I know that? Here's one of the state headlines in this morning's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. A Taco John's is coming to West Bend. Construction is underway. That's when I knew. I'm like, okay, we're gonna have some national stories today. Nothing against Taco John's. I love the potato Olays. I love the Taco Bravo. Nothing against West Bend, where I worked at WBKV for several years, which is not WBKV anymore. I don't know what it is anymore. So I would have loved to have had a Taco John's there back in the day.
We have one right around the corner. Nothing against Taco John's. You're right. The potato Olays are addictive.
Yep.
And That's probably a good thing I don't go to Taco John's a lot, because they'd just be like, can you make all of your potato olays and just put them in the back of my car? Please, I have a little tube that just feeds them directly into my eye sockets.
I would get like a little launcher and just launch them one at a time, although dip them in a little cheese sauce first. So
they get a cheese fountain that they go. They go, like,
ooh, the cheese fountain and potato olays. All right. Anyway, that's the big news, is West Bend is getting a Taco John's. There is also this story from Jesse O'Poyne in the Journal Sentinel that says Eric Hovde, on a trip to the Amazon, ate armadillo, swam with piranhas, and found relief from his MS because he got infected by parasites. So
I guess I'm voting again, for him.
I guess that's what's going to do it here. The full story is that the story is about Hovde going to the Amazon rainforest, and that along the way he contracted two parasites and discovered, as do other folks with multiple sclerosis, discovered that there are some parasites that appear to bring relief from some of the symptoms of this neurological disease, but they don't know nearly enough yet to say, yeah, by the way, if you just, you know, eat these, you know, worm eggs from this thing or another, it will, you know, take care of what ails you. So to the extent that it, you know, continues to spur research, that's great. But as Jesse notes in her story, a study published last year in the International Journal of Molecular Science concluded that, quote, the use of live parasites is not optimal. So there you go. They did notice some favorable changes in patients who ingested the eggs of the whipworm. However, the magnitude of these effects was modest, and there was considerable variation among the responses. So Hovde says, I look back and I go, oh my God, thank God I got two parasites. Well, yeah, he got lucky with the two parasites, but that's really what we have for political news to share with you today from the U.S. Senate race, which is why we're moving on to some of the other things that are happening out there. We mentioned earlier, for example, about Donald Trump just making a flat-out racist attack on the judge in his case. The quote was something like, just look at him. He hates Trump. Of course he hates Trump. I hate people who talk about themselves in third person, but that's another matter. He hates Trump. Just look at him. Look at him. Without saying, he's from Colombia and then grew up in the U.S. But I missed the punchline of that as I was reading through it further afterwards during one of the commercial breaks. There's another judge that's been looking out for Trump all this time, slow walking the national security documents case, and that's Judge Eileen Cannon, born in Colombia as well. So you'd like to think that if there is a hint of conscience left in Judge Cannon, she might have looked at that remark yesterday and said, oh, hell no, and maybe kind of moved this case right along. We'll see if that happens or not. The fake electors case in Arizona is moving along in that there were now arrangements made of the, I think it's 13 defendants in the Arizona case. Now, one of them, Christina Bobb, is the new National Republican Party's senior counsel for election integrity. She has pleaded not guilty in the Arizona fake electors case. And I just want to add, you know, an amen to all those who are saying, what do you think the news cycle would look like today if it was the head of voter mobilization of the Democratic Party who got arraigned for voter fraud? Would you see bigger headlines? You're damn right you would. And instead, you may not have even known about it till you heard about it just here. Former President Trump really stepped in it during a TV appearance yesterday when he said he was, quote, looking at the possibility of restricting access to contraception and that he would have a policy on that very shortly. He made the remarks to a local news reporter from television station KDKA in Pittsburgh and said again he would support the right of individual U.S. states to limit access to birth control. He said, you know, things really have a lot to do with the states, and some states are going to have different policies than others, but I am coming out within a week or so with a very comprehensive policy, which I'll get to you immediately. Translation, he will not get that to them immediately. There may not be a policy on this at all. It's what he says when he can't just say, I don't know, I'll look into it, I'll get back to you. He says, I will have a healthcare plan to you very shortly. I will have an infrastructure plan to you very shortly. Clearly, within moments, somebody got into his ear and said, Donnie, and he listened and said, oh. And then in all caps on his social media site wrote, I have never and will never advocate imposing restrictions on birth control or other contraception. So, Greg, it's final. It is set. He is going to get us a comprehensive plan immediately on the states limiting contraception, but he does not advocate restrictions on birth control. I hope that is taking care of any confusion you might have had.
I've got a comprehensive plan, and it is nothing.
It's nothing. And by the way, I'm not going to have a plan at all because I don't actually believe in what I just said.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to me tomorrow. See what I think tomorrow.
It's just, it's too much. And again, we don't know. Do you, because the whole reason we bring this up and say, you know, people say, oh, Trump just misspoke. Just let it go. Just let it go. No, here's why. For years, you had a parade of Supreme Court nominees and you had a parade of Republican politicians saying Roe v. Wade is settled law. It's the law of the land. It's settled. Nobody's going to do anything. Your, you know, abortion access, your reproductive rights are safe. And it was a lie. And so when somebody says to you at first, yeah, we're going to have this plan for the states to restrict birth control, and then says, huh, just kidding, which part are you going to believe? Believe the first part. Our homeroom segment is coming up next. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Wrightlow. Well, we are dealing with a couple of technical issues here with our next guest, Ben Dahlman, principal at Roosevelt Elementary in Eau Claire. But once he gets his laptop or desktop all connected, then we'll bring him on and we'll talk a bit more about today's homeroom segment, which is all about appreciating the work that principals do in our schools. And Ben Dahlman does that for Roosevelt in Eau Claire. And he was interviewed recently by one of his students, little Emery, who makes appearances here with us with Selena Heller every Monday morning around 7:05, 7:15. And this time around, yeah, Emery wrote up some questions for her principal and then asked them, and Selena taped the interview. And they were great questions on, you know, what a principal does and, you know, are there enough principals and what should people know about the job? And he did such a great job with Emery with the A team that we thought he wouldn't mind talking to the B team as well and talking for a few more minutes about things. Ben, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Pat. Thanks.
Hey, so nice to have you here. And it was really fun to see you talking to Emery about that. So for folks that kind of missed that, we wanted to have kind of an end of school year appreciation of principals. So, I mean, it seems self-evident, but again, for those of us who haven't been in elementary school in many, many years, how do you describe the current role of an elementary school principal?
I think the best is like servant leadership. I think it was a really big thing. I know when I started my coursework a long time ago at Vertura, but that was the very first class we had to take. And I think it's different than when growing up, where I pictured a principal, they just sit in their office all day. And if someone's not, you know, behaving correctly, they get sent to the office. And I think it's changed so much. We wear a lot of hats, and there's of like the main responsibilities. There's over 20 different main responsibilities. The first one is supposed to be instructional leader, but then along with this, there's all the day-to-days too. So I think there's a careful balance between school leadership and then also building management. And then those two both have to happen. Without one, the other won't work either. So.
Well, exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned the educational aspect of it, because again, fair or not fair, your first description was kind of like, you know, the warden, and you're only, it's only when you're in principal, in trouble that you got to go to the warden's office. And that is, you know, that does no favors toward the actual educational mission of the school.
Sure.
And so what are the ways that you kind of enhance that, not just through, you know, rule enforcement, but also, you know, mentoring and supervision and yes, those kinds of things? What is that part of your day like?
Yes. I would say the most important part of my job, is recruiting great people, hiring great people, developing and retaining. Like, that is all of it. Nobody can do this job by themselves. And that's such an important part of it. And that's something that has to, the hiring season is a really important time, but along with that, just maintaining a positive school culture is super important, because when you have it, it doesn't make your job easy, but it makes it easier, and it at least makes it possible. And when you don't have it, that would be really tough, because you have to hire great people and get out of the way and let them do their job. So there's a really, really good balance between, doing what you can do to help people as much as you can, but also empowering other people to be leaders within the building too. So there's a lot of shared leadership within a successful school, and that takes work, that takes trust, and takes putting great people in the right position.
How does that work, the hiring process, for teachers and then, you know, staff, if that's differently? You know, how much of it is on the principal versus the school district? You know, do they hire people and then, you know, it's decided elsewhere, you know, what school they're going to go to? How does that work for Eau Claire right now?
Yeah, so there are some of the positions are like district-led positions. With that, so some of our specialist positions, we have that too. We are a small school in a large district, and so that is unique. And so we do have a lot of autonomy as far as who we're hiring to bring into our school, especially teachers, our hourly support staff, all of that. And then we do have, you know, a district leadership for like special education or English language learners or school psychologists or things like that. And that's where we work as a district. And so a lot of times we'll have, if we have multiple schools needing the same position filled, we'll sometimes interview together and then try to figure out what is the best fit. Some people are more comfortable with elementary versus middle school versus high school. And so there's a little bit of each with it too, but that's probably the most important part of the job is getting the right people in place.
Yeah. And once you've got that team in place, you know, having that team, you know, feel like a team. And so I asked this next question because it comes up frequently in our homeroom segment. And that is, again, just the appreciation and respect, you know, due for local public school teachers and educators of all levels versus the political environment, which is obviously turbulent at times, downright disrespectful and negative at other times. To what degree do you and other principals play the role of chief morale officer or whatever you would say to, you know, try to keep the that day's mission in mind as opposed to the loud voices coming from, you know, capitals and school board meetings and things like that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is reassurance. It's not trying to hide things, but there's a really bright principal before me that shared, like, part of this job is kind of filtering all the noise. And there are some things that people just need to be up to date on and informed on. But then there is a lot of noise sometimes too. And sometimes the noise doesn't have a lot of merit. And so sometimes it's either sharing like, this is what it is, and here's kind of the why behind it, or this is not necessarily what it is. And this is something, you know, just reassuring people like, here's where we're at. And then just giving some evidence as to why we're there with it. And so, I mean, the other part of like even hiring too, when you hire people, you want the brightest people. You also want people that are collaborative and that will work together and love building relationships with kids and families and staff. That is so important. And so it really requires a lot, like more hiring a staff member. There's a lot of boxes that need to be checked. And one of them has to do with working with people, even when you disagree, working with people and to keep that positive environment, because that shared respect is so important with it. And it's a tough job, but it's an important job at the same time.
Ben Dahlman is our guest. He's the principal at Roosevelt Elementary School in Eau Claire. Folks who are critical of educators, teachers, professors point to a couple of things. They point to tenure, they point to unions, and they make the case that there are bad apples that you just can't get rid of. I'm sure it's not your favorite part of the job, but how do things work when it appears that somebody is either a bad match for the school or maybe a bad match for teaching? Have you had to go through that process very much, and what's it like?
Yeah, I think, part of retaining and developing staff, for everyone, we start trying to develop and improve. Sometimes you do get to the point of you start with either coaching someone to do their job better, and you do as much as you can. But if you're in that situation, then it's sometimes coaching into another career. And so it's not that we don't like someone or something along those lines, but teaching and other jobs within a school. It does take a very specific skill set. And so that is part of it too. Because it's really coming down to what is best for kids. And if we need to do something differently to be better for kids, then that's our responsibility as well.
And the thing is, it happens in every field. My wife's a physician. She has seen people go all the way through med school, but then it came to actually seeing patients and it just didn't work out. I've seen people get master's degrees in journalism. They can write, but then when it comes to being out in the field, it just doesn't work out. So I'm not surprised to hear that there are people who really think that teaching is the right thing, but instead maybe there's an affiliated or an allied, part of education that they could be doing instead. And goodness knows there are so many other, what I'm calling support staff roles, where I'm sure you're always looking out for new people.
Yes. Yeah, that is certainly true. We have 57 staff members, only 12 are classroom teachers. And so that shows you there's a large percentage of our school staff are not your traditional classroom teacher that you might picture, but certainly playing an important role. And each one has a really important role through the eyes of a child. If we have staff members that are absent, it's noticed because kids are connected. It's especially in an elementary school where kids spend a majority of the day with the same group of students and the same group of staff. It's very connected. I think the other difference, I used to teach high school and middle school. With elementary, it's so unique because you get to see a child come in as a 5-year-old or sometimes a 4-year-old during orientation, and you get to see the next six years of their life. And it is phenomenal, just the changes that they go through in 6 years.
Oh my goodness, it's got to be it's amazing. It's
fascinating.
To watch that. And by the way, and then they keep going from there. You might see them at 18 and then not recognize them again when they're 60. Yep. But that's another matter. Do you see principals as ambassadors to the community as well? And how do you help engage the community to support the school? I mean, it might be from a morale standpoint. It might actually be from a financial standpoint.
Yeah, no, that's exactly, that's a really important part of it as well, too, because it is a community. It's not just a school. And with that, I think if you're going to find what you're looking for. If you're looking for negative, you're going to find problems. If you're looking for good, you're going to find good. And so there's a lot of good in a lot of things. Even sometimes there are things that come up in the media about schools failing or things like that, too. But you don't always hear about the successes, like some really phenomenal successes too that get out there. And so that's important to be an ambassador in that capacity, working along with families. We have a very motivated family group. We've been fundraising for a two-phase playground project. We completed our last phase last summer, $62,000. and we are dangerously close to reaching our next goal of $50,000 to finish our playground project. And we're a small school of about 240 students, but in 3 years, we've raised almost $110,000 for this, for the kids. And this, none of this would have happened without a very engaged family group at our school, but also an engaged community and local businesses too have really stepped up, because we have about 40% of students living in poverty. And so we can't rely on only our student families to fund something like that. So.
And you're not going to raise $100,000 in bake sales.
Nope.
You know, you need a bit more. It's why our friend Chris Hambuck Boyle puts on Facebook here, thanks Roosevelt Elementary for your amazing community connections and hard work for your fun playground. You know, these are the kinds of things that, again, outside of the classroom are so necessary. And then one of Emery's questions to you was, you know, what would you like to do more of? And you turned the question around about something you'd like to do less of, being in administration. Let's talk about all that paperwork.
Well, I started teaching in the late 90s, and email was not a thing. And there are times we're doing a lot of things way better than we did 25 years ago. But if there's one thing I could remove from school or life in general, just emails. It is a lot of paperwork, and it is one where it's necessary, it's important, but certainly not my favorite part of the job. And finding that balance, I do not want to be in my office all day because I really need to be out in classrooms. I need to be with kids. I need to be around staff. And if I would only focus on, and so that's a big part of this job, is being okay with 423 unread emails and starting the day with that. You know, so there's things like that. It's really important to give yourself grace as well too, and being flexible.
Exactly.
If there's someone that can't stand being interrupted, this is not the job for you. But it's never boring. I mean, there's always exciting things happening and unpredictable things every day.
There's nothing more true in so many workplaces than A, this meeting could have been an email, and B, this email does not have to be read right now. And it sounds like you're definitely getting a handle on that, like so many other principals do. Yeah. Ben Dahlman, principal at Roosevelt Elementary in Eau Claire, thank you so much for your time. Hope you have a great day, and thanks for all you're doing for the kids.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Pat.
All right, Ben, have a wonderful day. When we come back, Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show is coming up right after this. You're up north. By the way, is a special request for bumper music for one Todd Alba, who is referenced each week at this time by Tony up in Hayward as the Todd Father, and asking if the Todd Father is bringing the vibes today. But by the way, this is the same Tony who, during talking to a sweet elementary school principal about bake sales, Tony pops up with, "Oh, it depends on what kind of brownies you sell." Tony, we can't talk like that with the principal that's talking to us. But Todd Alba with the Hogan's Heroes theme is reporting to us by phone live on a street corner someplace. Mr. Alba, how are you? Where are you? And what's with the Hogan's Heroes? Is it about the jacket there that seems to resemble what Colonel Hogan would wear?
Wiedersehen. We are Kleitlo, Bach. We are here outside of the Wisconsin Republican Party headquarters, but apparently they like the Nazis.
That was a long walk for that joke, Todd. Long walk.
Wow.
I literally got my butt up just to come down here this morning to be out. This is actually the Republican Party state headquarters behind me, where they're so embarrassed they don't even put the name on the door, by the way.
I'm sorry. I have seen the name. The name is all over the building. It says right there, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. It's right there on the building, Todd.
Down the street. Yeah.
Yes. Well, Todd, here in Waukesha County, they have the nerve to put it on the building. They got the guts in Waukesha here.
Yep.
I don't have my brown shirt on, but I have a tan shirt and a little black jacket. Yeah, I look a little like a poor Nazi or Colonel Hogan. But yeah, I just thought it was appropriate after, you know, the Trumpmeister yesterday tweeted out in all seriousness, or on his Truth Social, put out this thing about unified Reich. and referencing the Nazi regime and how sick it was. It took him hours and hours to take it down. Then he blamed it on a staffer. We talked, we had a cut yesterday from Trump from Mar-a-Lago saying only he and one other senior staffer have the pin or whatever to truth social stuff out. So it had to be him. They knew exactly what they were doing. And last night, Derek Van Orten from the 3rd District here in Wisconsin was bragging about going over to Normandy on D-Day coming up to play a paratrooper with a bunch of other beer-gutted guys and jump out of a plane. And I said to Derek, I said, hey, Congressman Van Orten, if you want to fight Nazis, you don't have to go to Europe. You can do it right here in Wisconsin. Just call out the Trumpster on posting Nazi stuff. And no reply.
Fair point. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And of course, the Trump campaign immediately went with blame the staffer. You know, the word Reich was kind of, you know, they said buried in this video clip that they reposted from somebody else. And that as soon as it was brought to their attention, it was taken down. But again, it's you don't do the things that would open yourself up to this. Meaning you don't do your social media on the cheap, or you're going to slip up and things like this are going to happen where people go, well, you know, it got posted for a reason. And it's emboldening people that really should never have the right to feel emboldened in this country.
Well, we referenced two things. Robert Reich had a great piece yesterday going through and talking about the 5 steps on the playbook of Hitler that the Trump campaign and Trump is using, fascists, all seriousness, all documented in Trump's own words. And then we reference this great piece by Anderson Cooper on 60 Minutes on CBS on Sunday, which he was interviewing Holocaust survivors. And I thought the most poignant part of the whole piece was at the end when a woman who had survived the Holocaust, one of the youngest people at the time, now one of the last living survivors, she said, Anderson asked her, are you surprised at what human nature is capable of? And she said, after you see it, no. And she said, all it takes is permission to be our worst selves. And I think that's what Donald Trump is doing. And I don't say that as a joke. I say it in dead seriousness as a former Republican for 30 years who left the party in 2011. He spent a lot of time in this building behind me at the state Republican headquarters. I never thought I'd see the day when my former party can't even denounce Nazis.
Well, or just racism as well. And I reacted this morning probably more strongly than I would have liked. But, you know, I'm sure you heard Trump say about the judge overseeing his trial. He said yesterday, just look at him. Of course he's opposed to me. Just look at him. Pointing out that, you know, he didn't say the words he was born in Colombia. He didn't say the words he's a foreigner, but it is so clearly, obviously racist. And yet national reporters like the one that set me off was Sam Stein. I don't know if he's still at the Huffington Post or where he's with now, but he was like, you know, so he didn't really say what he was going to say. It could have been that he grew up in Queens. And I'm like, stop apologizing or stop looking for reasons not to call racism racism.
And to your point, Pat, when you look at Project 2025, when you look at what Trump is telling us what he will do in a second term, and in his words, maybe a third term, and targeting 11 to 18 million folks to deport, they're not going to be looking at papers. It's, do you look like someone who doesn't belong here? And then you're rounded up and sent away. Everybody who has someone in their family who is non-white and thinks it couldn't happen to them, think again.
Yeah. By the way, Greg, if you have the original bumper music that I had picked, because it was Bernie Taupin's birthday, so we're playing a lot of things with Bernie Taupin lyrics. So while we've got Spicy Todd here, I wanted you to at least hear a little bit of what I'd selected for you.
Yes, please.
I was very proud of myself for that. Not that the Hogan's Heroes thing doesn't work, but I figured while we got Spicy Todd, who actually would go to the state Republican headquarters to do a bit, is pretty cool. And yet it appears that once again the Republicans are going to be the Wile E. Coyote in a Roadrunner cartoon as Senate Democrats tomorrow once again bring up the bipartisan border bill that they were all set to go for. And I loved how over the weekend, you know, Tom Tiffany at the Republican convention tried to somehow make excuses like, oh, that bill wasn't ready. That nobody believes you except your most ardent supporters.
And you probably saw one of the original authors, Senator Langford from Oklahoma, conservative Republican, helped co-author that bill, is now saying on CNN last night he may vote against it because, you know, it just isn't the right time now. I mean, once again, people are politically genuflecting at the altar of Donald Trump.
No credibility whatsoever. None. No. But boy, talk about bonus points for commitment there to get in the car.
For you, Patrick, the world.
Absolutely. But also knowing their stance on the Second Amendment, I'd urge that you get on back. Get to the station soon, and we'll hear more.
I'm going to be practicing my goose stepping out here.
We'll see you at noon, Mr. Alba. Thank you. Mr. Bach, we'll see you with Matt and Air on Air coming up at 10 o'clock. Thanks to all of you for joining us as well. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Thank you for being part of our Wednesday morning. We'll see you back here 6 a.m. tomorrow.